Hello and welcome to this podcast. I'm Christy Robinson, one of several members of the ISB staff who are working on the ISB's project to update its conceptual framework. With me is Steve Cooper, an ISB board member, and Peter Clark, the ISB's Director of Research. Together, we are going to talk about some proposals in the ISB's recently issued discussion paper, a review of the conceptual framework for financial reporting. The proposals we will be discussing concern profit and loss and other comprehensive income, otherwise known as OCI. In particular, we want to discuss the different approaches to distinguishing between those items of income and expense that are recognised in profit and loss and those that are recognised in OCI. But before we get to the discussion, I just want to remind you that the views that Steve, Peter and I express during this podcast are our own. They are not necessarily shared by other board members or staff of the ISB. The official position of the ISB is explained in the conceptual framework discussion paper. So, okay, let's get started. In this podcast, we want to talk more about the approaches to profit and loss in OCI and the CT, but I think before we do that, it may be worth first recapping what problems we're really trying to address by addressing these issues. Peter, would you like to make some comments about that?
Yeah, this is something that really came up in the agenda consultation that we did in 2011, and a lot of people commented on the fact that we've been using OCI a fair bit over the years, but there's not been any real common theme underlying the cases when it's used and explaining when we use it and when we don't use it. Similarly, there's been no common theme on whether we use what's often called recycling. That's what, once something's been recognised in OCI, subsequently recognised it's in profit or loss. And so the respondents felt that it would be useful if we could develop some conceptual basis for when we use OCI and when we recycle.
So, thanks, Peter. Now, although the discussion paper presents some alternative proposals to presenting profit or loss and OCI, it is worth noting that the board did come to some preliminary views. Steve, do you want to talk a bit, set out what they are and talk a bit about them?
Yeah, as you say, a lot of what's in the discussion paper is some tentative ideas without definitive views from the board. But the board did reach maybe a couple of key decisions. One is that we should retain both profit and loss and OCI. Some have suggested in the past that we'd be better off moving to a single statement of comprehensive income, not differentiate between profit and loss items and OCI items, and even remove any subtotals from the statement, letting investors make what they wish of different components. But I think the board felt that that wasn't appropriate. I think in the past we have reconfirmed our belief that profit and loss as a subtotal is an important measure used in practice, and it can be made useful through the way in perhaps we can approach classification. So we also decided that profit and loss should be the primary picture of the return an entity has made on its resources. And I feel we haven't perhaps defined what we mean by that very well, but I think the board has this approach where we do believe it's worthwhile providing the separation between the two components.
So having decided that we do want to retain profit and loss, and we think it is a primary measure, or the information set that it represents gives a primary picture, the discussion paper then looks at ways it could distinguish what items are recognised in profit and loss from those that are recognised in OCI. And the board could have gone two ways here. It could have described profit or loss, or described and defined OCI. The approaches discussed in the discussion paper seek to describe OCI. Peter, perhaps you could explain why the ISB took this approach.
Yes, and I think there are two ways the board could have tried to define what goes into profit or loss. One would have been to come up with one or perhaps a small number of characteristics that are common to everything that goes in profit or loss. And we haven't actually found a way to do that. Steve mentioned earlier that the board's view that P&L should be presenting the primary picture of the return the entity's made. But that's really a description of the outcome of putting things in profit or loss. It's not really a definition of what goes into there. The other way to do it would have been to come up with a kind of shopping list of the things that go into profit or loss. But the problem with shopping lists is that they're never really complete, and the inevitable result of using shopping lists is that we would leave some things out that most people would probably feel should be included in profit or loss. So we thought, as OCI is really likely to be a narrower set of items, it should be easier to either define what goes in there or at least come up with some sort of description of the things that go into OCI.
And another question.
I was just going to add, Christy, that many people have asked us to provide a definition of profit and loss, mm-hmm. and I think some of the feedback that we're getting so far is, well, you know, really that's the way to go. But so far I have to say that nobody's come up with a definition that I think works. I mean, people have said operating versus non-operating, realized versus mm-hmm. unrealized, under management's control, all these things. But each one of those seems to present problems and difficulties that doesn't really describe perhaps what people really understand to be performance. So I think based upon the work that we've done and the feedback we've got so far, I find it quite difficult to think of any other approach other than the one that Peter was describing. But of course, we're open to suggestions, and if people would like to give us definitions of profit and loss in their comment letters, I would be extremely interested to read them.
Because that's a good point, Stephen. You mentioned financial performance, and the discussion paper doesn't seek to define financial performance either. Can you sort of give some sense of why we didn't do that?
Well, I think many people would say that there are many different aspects of financial performance. There's obviously the various gains and losses that appear in the statement of comprehensive income, and they have many, many different characteristics, some being flows, some being remeasurement type items, some being realized and unrealized. But also, some would argue that financial performance extends to things which are beyond the statement of comprehensive income. Some would include cash flow measures as part of performance, or various measures or changes within the balance sheet. So I think trying to define financial performance was always going to be extremely difficult. I mean, I would think of financial performance in a very holistic way, that you can't summarize it in one number. It requires consideration of perhaps several different subtotals of gains and losses together with other information to really understand financial performance. I think what we need to do within presentation of a statement of comprehensive income and profit and loss and OCI is to find a way of disaggregating and presenting these gains and losses in a manner that most effectively facilitates investors' understanding performance. It's not an end in its own right. It's not that one number tells you about financial performance, but we present in such a way that it helps people better understand the totality of financial performance.
So going back to, I suppose, Peter's initial response, having described the items of income and expense that may be presented in OCI, the discussion paper sets out three different scenarios, and these sort of types of items where the ISB might determine that the use of OCI is appropriate. But the discussion paper also identifies some common attributes that all items must have to be presented in other comprehensive income. Peter, could you perhaps give a sense of what those are?
Yes, well, the most important point is that it would only be for remeasurement. By remeasurement, we mean coming up with a current measurement of something. So, for example, it might be coming up with a fair value, or perhaps a revalued amount, or the measure that's proposed in insurance contracts, for example, and this is a current measurement. So that rules out any income or expense that would arise on initial recognition of an asset or liability. Now, as it happens, OCI has only been used for remeasurements in the past. It hasn't been used for initial measurements. But at least that restriction means that we wouldn't consider using OCI for initial measurements in other current projects. And I guess places where people have sometimes mentioned OCI in the past have been, for example, for emission trading schemes, or perhaps for rate-regulated activities. Another point is that it's unlikely to be all remeasurements. So, for example, it almost certainly wouldn't be things like impairments, which people expect today, C&P&L, and I'm sure that would continue in the future. So it's some, but not all. And the other point that's perhaps worth making here as well is that the decision to use OCI, at the moment IS1 says that all items of income and expense go through profit or loss unless a standard requires or permits otherwise. And we expect that to continue, that it will continue to be a decision that's made in individual standards by the ISB. It's not something that would be a decision to be made by preparers as they're applying the standards.
Thanks, Peter. So if we get into how the discussion paper has described those types of items where OCI might be appropriate, it might be worth describing each of those in turn. So the first one we've labelled, and these are labelled, they really are trying to group the types of characteristics of transactions that may be presented in OCI. So the first one is mismatch remeasurements, and Steve, would you like to maybe give an overview of those?
Yeah, this is a situation where OCI has been used in the past, and we might consider its use in the future. It's a situation where we have a transaction, a remeasurement, but where that is part of a wider economic situation, a wider transaction or a group of transactions that have this overall economic effect. And perhaps it's best illustrated by using two examples. By far the best example is cash flow hedge accounting. So we have a situation where we have a hedging instrument, we are remeasuring that instrument, we have this remeasurement gain or loss, but it's linked to, it's part of a wider consideration of an economic position where the entity has an exposure, but that exposure isn't recognised in the financial statements because it relates to a future transaction. So hedging the foreign exchange risk for forecast sales, for example. The forecast sales and the potential gains and losses on those isn't reflected in the financial statements, but the hedging transaction is. So this is a mismatch in terms of the remeasurement. We're remeasuring one part of this overall economic position, but we're not remeasuring the other. Recognizing the gain or loss on the hedging instrument in OCI and then recycling it at the point where the other part of the transaction is recognized would seem to be a sensible way of accounting. It provides you with the information about the gain or loss on the hedging transaction, but it also doesn't include that in profit or loss until the related transaction occurs. The other example we sometimes use is foreign currency translation. Now this is a bit more difficult because the idea here is that we have a foreign subsidiary, we're translating its results at the current rate, so we're remeasuring for the foreign exchange effect. But the bit that's missing is the fact that the foreign subsidiary itself may be using amortized cost in its measurement. So we've got this incomplete picture of a cost-based measurement in the local currency translated at a current exchange rate. Now, of course, it doesn't always work that way, and that's why the mismatch remeasurement for foreign currency translation perhaps is not a perfect way of describing it, but we chose to use that as an illustration, and no doubt people will have their own views as to whether that fits or not, or what other transactions perhaps might or might not fit into this mismatch remeasurement category. But it seemed to us to be a sensible basis on which you might want to consider using OCI.
Thank you. And then, Peter, then it might be good for you to talk about bridging items.
Yeah, so the idea here was that if the board has made a decision that it really wants to give a kind of two-dimensional view of some particular asset or liability using two different measurements, then OCI would be the way to achieve that. So to give an example, in the exposure draft on financial instruments, the current one that the board is discussing the responses to at the moment on classification measurements of financial assets, there's a proposal to introduce a category of financial assets, basically debt instruments, that would be measured at fair value in the statement of financial position, but for which the profit or loss account will be based on amortized cost information. And so a key measure, OCI, provides a bridge between the amortized cost measurement that's used to derive the numbers in profit or loss and the fair value measurement that's used in the balance sheet. And I think it is important to remember that really that it is the accumulated OCI that provides that bridge. The annual movement in the OCI has slightly less significance in some senses. One of the interesting points about this bridging item notion is that for these items, the notion of the bridging really points to the conclusion on recycling. If your objective is to get, for example, amortized cost information or profit or loss, then the only way to achieve that is that if this debt instrument is sold, then you would recycle the accumulated OCI to profit or loss at that point to get the same profit or loss effects as you would have had if you'd been measuring on an amortized cost basis. There aren't actually too many places where we use the bridging item type logic at the moment. The other place that it's proposed, something similar to that is proposed, is in the exposure draft on insurance contracts, where it's proposed that the measurement used in the balance sheet would be using all current inputs and assumptions, including current interest rates. But the information prepared in profit or loss would be using the original interest rates, that's the rates that existed at inception of the contract, although all other assumptions would be based on current information. So what that does is it provides two different pictures of the liability, one based on current interest rates, one based on the original interest rates. And cumulative OCI provides a sort of snapshot of the difference between the current rates and the effect of the current rates and the effect of the historic rates. And that information is actually important as well for insurance companies, because if rates stay at their current rates, then if there's a duration mismatch between the assets and liabilities, the insurer could be exposed to that and will ultimately end up paying more or less cash as a result. So the cumulative OCI does provide a snapshot of that exposure, an imperfect snapshot, but it does provide a snapshot of that.
Okay, and then Steve, if you could do the last grouping, which we've termed or labelled transitory mechanisms.
Yeah, I think the board was quite comfortable that the mismatch remeasurements and the bridging items help in our objective of trying to find profit and loss as the primary measure of performance. But there was a question mark over whether we should go further, and that maybe excluding some other items from profit or loss may help in providing that information. So we looked at this third group, which is transitory remeasurements. So these are still remeasurements. We're suggesting that maybe we should restrict it to items which are long-term, items that could significantly change, or maybe they fully reverse up to the point when they mature. And we're suggesting that maybe some of these items could be excluded from profit and loss in order to enhance the relevance of that profit and loss measure as a primary measure of performance. Now, the trouble with this is that it's potentially a very broad group, and it raises the question of whether we should or shouldn't recycle, because that's a more difficult issue. And perhaps the best example of this that we have at the moment is pensions, where we're putting these actuarial gains and losses into OCI for the purpose of enhancing the relevance of profit and losses as a measure of performance. But the recycling in this category and what exactly goes into this category does present problems.
And you mentioned pensions. I know the board, and it's sort of represented in the discussion paper as well, spent a lot of time discussing whether the income or expense resulting from pensions could be a bridging item. Peter, do you want to summarise that discussion?
Yeah, it's perhaps worth recapping what we meant first of all by the bridging item. So that's where the amounts presented in profit or loss are based on something that's actually a measurement of that asset or liability. It's not the same measurement as is actually used in the balance sheet, but it is nevertheless a measurement. Now let me try and illustrate why what we do for pensions isn't consistent with the bridging notion. I'll use a little example. Let's suppose that this year we have a service cost of 10, and then next year we have the same employees, the same benefits are going to arise, but our actuarial assumptions have changed, and now our service cost is 12. So the total service cost we've had over a few years is 22. but the current measure of the liability is now 24 because we've got 2 years, and our updated estimate is that those 2 years' service will cost us 12 each, so 2 times 12 is 24. And the difference between the cumulative amount that's gone through profit or loss, the 22 that I mentioned, and the 24 that's the current measure, that's what's in accumulated OCI. So there'd be two in accumulated OCI. Now, the 22 that's gone through profit or loss is not consistent with any sort of reasonable measure of the liability. The only way you could come up with that 22 would be by aggregating the service cost for each year, and also adding interest, which I excluded from my example to try and keep it simpler. So really, that total amount that's gone through profit or loss isn't consistent with any sort of viable measure of the liability. One thing I also find interesting about that discussion is that the reason why it's not a bridging item is also related to the reason why we can't find a reasonable basis for recycling the pension cost, because there is no real trigger that says when we would move the items from accumulated OCI to profit or loss. Of course, we could do something arbitrary, like the corridor that's used in US GAAP for recycling pension costs there, but it wouldn't have any real information value. It would just be a mathematical exercise to transfer it from one place to another. And so I think it's interesting, I think, to see that link between the rationale for the bridging and the fact that recycling wouldn't work for pensions.
And Steve, you mentioned, talking more about transitory remeasurements, that it is a potentially broad category. And do you think it would be correct to think that there might be some items that we currently report in profit and loss would actually meet that definition of a transitory remeasurement and be reported in other comprehensive income?
I think it's important to highlight first that this would be a decision by the IASB. So as Peter said, we have no intention of having OCI as a category that is free for use by reporting entities based on their own judgment of where items should go. So this would have to be something that is specified in an accounting standard. But based upon the description that I gave of a transitory remeasurement, you could think of other items being included. So, for example, the remeasurement of long-term provisions. Peter mentioned about pensions, which currently go into OCI. Well, there are remeasurements of other long-term non-financial liabilities, litigation, environmental liabilities, which have similar characteristics as pension obligations. They're long-term, they're uncertain, they're subject to periodic remeasurement. So conceptually, one can think maybe some of those should be reported in OCI, and that would enhance the relevance of profit and loss. Maybe some other foreign currency translation effects, fair value biological assets, IAS40 investment property remeasurements. There's a whole long list of remeasurements. Now, I'm not suggesting for 1 minute that I would support putting those in OCI, but it is something that the board would have to think about if we went for this more broader category. So each time the board considered an accounting standard that involved some remeasurement, then the question of whether OCI should be used for that remeasurement would inevitably come up.
Yeah, and just to follow up on that, and I think when these accounting treatments were originally put in place, for quite a lot of them, OCI didn't really exist at that time, and so there was no explicit discussion at that time whether to use it. So clearly, if the technology were available, maybe it would have been used. It's maybe worth also underlining that the conceptual framework by itself is not going to change which items are reported in OCI. The board would need to go through the full due process, including the agenda setting process, before it actually makes any changes to particular standards. And that's obviously something that will be in the future.
So the discussion paper also talks about a broad approach and a narrow approach to describing what items are eligible to be presented in OCI. So, you know, we've talked about the different categories which the discussion paper talks about that may be eligible for presentation in OCI. Perhaps, Peter, could you explain in the context of those categories how the board saw we might work with them to create or be able to distinguish what is presented in OCI from profit and loss.
Yeah, so the discussion paper really presented what it described as two approaches, a narrow approach and a broad approach. Those labels maybe aren't particularly helpful, but they're a way of sort of summarising the couple of alternatives. So the narrow approach would say that OCI would be used for the bridging items and the mismatch remeasurements that we described earlier, and wouldn't really be used for anything else. Because we said that both bridging and mismatching would involve recycling, that would imply that all items would be recycled within the narrow approach. The narrow approach is quite narrow. Not all the existing uses of OCI would fit into that, for example, pensions, as we've mentioned. The broad approach uses those two categories, the bridging items and the mismatch remeasurements, but it also includes the transitory remeasurements. And again, it's worth underlining that not all items that might be identified as transitory remeasurements would necessarily be end up in OCI, but they would be eligible for the board to think about using OCI for them. So clearly, the broad approach would include more items than the narrow approach. It would involve more judgment by the IASB because it would need to decide whether or not to use OCI, whether that's going to provide the most relevant information and package it in the most understandable way for users. One other point that might be worth making, we referred earlier to the agenda consultation that was done in 2011, and a lot of the responses said that they wanted us to put more discipline on the use of OCI. I think the trade-off here is the narrow approach puts quite a tight discipline on it, quite narrowly defined categories, not so much judgment, always recycling. The broad approach includes more items, but I think the cost of that is that the transitory items are not defined as precisely as the other two categories, and also the board would need to exercise judgment when it's deciding whether to use OCI for particular transitory remeasurements. And then of course the other point about transitory remeasurements is that some would be recycled and some would not be recycled, and the board again would have to judge case by case whether that provides relevant information.
Thanks. So we've also, we have started talking to people about the proposals in the discussion paper, and we have heard some comments that these approaches are retrofitting to the conceptual framework what IASB currently does with respect to OCI. Steve, do you have any comments or reactions to that view?
I think the view is incorrect. I think people have failed to understand, I think, the full implications of what we've done here, because I think the narrower approach to reuse of OCI would clearly be inconsistent with the current position on OCI, because it would restrict the use of OCI, and some items that are currently in OCI would have to be taken out if the board were to go through a process of amending standards and making all the standards consistent with such a narrow view. On the other hand, the board have suggested that maybe the approach to use OCI should be broader, as Peter was describing. Well, if that were the case, then some items that are currently in profit and loss might be transferred to OCI again through a process of amending standards. So I don't think either of the two approaches that we have been retrofitted to the current status quo. Both of them would potentially involve changes. The only thing where perhaps there is an element of truth is the fact that the board has decided to retain profit and loss and OCI. So we currently have profit and loss and OCI, and the board has suggested in the framework that we should keep that. So in that sense, I suppose we're retrofitting, but I think the criticism that all we're doing is retrofitting to existing position, I think, is unfair, because I just don't think it's true.
Thanks. So I think actually that's about all the time we have for today's podcast. So thank you, Peter, and thank you, Steve. I think that's quite a lot to take in for quite a complicated subject. So this podcast will be available on the conceptual framework page of the IASB's website, and actually along with recordings of webcasts that we've done on other parts of the discussion paper. We actually also have a high-level overview, again, about OCI and profit and loss within those. But we have other sections of the discussion paper discussed, including definitions of assets and liabilities, definition of equity and distinction between liability and equity elements, measurement, additional guidance to support the liability definition and objective and qualitative characteristics. I would also note we have another webcast scheduled for later in November, on Monday the 26th of November at 11 a.m. UK time, and that will be on presentation and disclosure. So in terms of the discussion paper, the comment period closes on the 14th of January 2014. We'd be very interested in your views on the approaches in the discussion paper, and in particular to profit and loss and OCI. If you agree with them, we'd be good to hear that. But in particular, if you think you have alternative proposals, we really would like to understand what those are. So therefore, with that final request, I'd like to finish this podcast, and thank you for listening. Bye.